Excellent day for an exorcism.
You'd like that?
Intensely.
Hey guys, welcome back to Spooky Tuesday, a weekly podcast where we're breaking down all of our favorite slashers, thrillers, TV shows, black
Whoa.
Comedies, and
Whoa.
Monster movies.
TV shows,
new change
the
whole
lineup.
Podcast?
She added a new section in.
You guys are doing TV
decision.
Shows now. Okay, you can keep going.
I'm Cindy Thompson.
I'm Monica Height.
I'm Chelsea Duff.
And today we are joined by a special, special guest. We had Lauren a few weeks ago, but now we're putting the final puzzle piece together. We've got Ashley from Keep It Weird. Ashley, would you like to say anything to the listeners?
Hello. I feel like I got in on an exclusive. She was like, TV shows. And everyone was like, we do TV now.
It's breaking news. We're doing TV,
breaking
but
news.
Not today.
That's showbiz, baby.
That's showbiz. It changes on a dime. I actually have a question.
Oh.
Okay, I'm Ashley. I co-host the podcast Keep It Weird with Lauren. You met her, so you kind of know our bag. We talk about all things strange and unusual. But I need an update on Puppetgate.
Ooh,
have the puppets
yeah.
returned and
Thank
have
you.
They caused any more chaos?
For asking this question, because it's something that I think about all the time now. I've had the door open on its own a few more times.
Great.
So that's been spooky.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't found them, but I haven't looked either, if that helps, because I don't want to confront the demon. Yeah, just going
to
try to ignore it. But I did find wow, this is so gross. I did find a maggot-infested dead rat in my house yesterday.
Ooh.
So
that feels like a sign.
That's spooky. And I just want to let all the listeners know, and you know, Ashley, maggots are really fucking fast. They're much faster than you would expect them to be. And when trying to clean them up, they almost all got away. So
that
just a word to the wise.
Is something I never wanted to know.
Yeah, well,
I'm glad I know.
I hope you never have to experience this.
They didn't
maggots
show me
that
on
something...
bones.
Maggots are something that I'm always like, that's just in movies. Like,
yeah,
maggots
no,
they're
aren't
not real.
Real.
Yeah.
Well, I did feel
just a movie creepy crawly.
I did
feel
badass.
And maggots. Like, no, thank you.
No, it was disgusting. I was like, wow, this is my first time seeing this in person, but not my first time experience with maggots in general, because I grew up watching Fear Factor.
Yeah.
So I was like, I was born with a unique set of skills that is cleaning up this shit, because Adam, my boyfriend, was literally almost vomiting. He could not handle it at all. And he,
yes,
I was like,
Adam,
can you leave? Like, I'm going to take care of this.
You are living the beginning of a horror movie, at least.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad signs happening right now.
Cool. Well, I'm excited to see how this progresses, and I wish you
Thank
the best.
You. I am not dead yet, so that's really good. But yeah, we're having Ashley on the pod today. One, to check in to see if I'm still alive. Two, mm-hmm. Because you know, we had to complete the package deal of Keep It Weird. And three, we're doing the movie today because Ashley, we asked her what she wanted, and what she wanted to do on Spooky Tuesday was The Exorcist 3. And we were like, that sounds so cool. But none of us, I don't know if this is right, none of us have seen The Exorcist 1. And it's one of those that I feel like you like have to do if you have a horror podcast, right?
Probably.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And also, like, it's one of those movies where, like, I don't mention that I've never seen it and I have a horror podcast, you know?
Yeah, you gotta keep it
low. Yeah, you don't want to get
yeah,
you don't want to get immediately attacked for
yeah, exactly. But I could admit it now because I have seen it now. But anyway, mm-hmm. you changed our life. You brought this demon into our lives. And we're doing the OG, The Exorcist, today. And it's only so, like, next year we can do Exorcist 3 with you. And that is, this is a long con.
Well, because I thought Exorcist 3 immediately, because it's one of my favorite horror movies. No one's ever seen it. It has had kind of a resurgence, because a couple of years ago,
think it was like 2019 or 2020, some company tested what's the scariest movie ever made. And they did it by like hooking people up to like electrodes and like seeing how, exactly, like seeing how fast their heart rate got, like how many like screams, how many jump scares, da 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 da. And like every movie on the list was stuff, you know, it was like Insidious, The Conjuring, Sinister was on there. Yeah, it was all those. And then randomly, Exorcist 3. And I think that caused a lot of people to be like, wait a minute. Like, I didn't even know they made a third Exorcist movie. It's fantastic. Obviously,
why was it on the list?
Because there is one part of that movie that no matter what, like, don't ever look it up. Experience it for the first time. You will jump out of your chair. Like, you will catapult yourself. It is so scary. It's like one of the best jump scares of all time.
This is the best sell for Exorcist 3 I've ever heard.
I'm so excited. Wait, the thing is, my question is, like, they obviously had to, like, watch a list of movies. How did Exorcist 3 make it even onto the list? Maybe someone saw it and they were like, I shit my pants when that scary part happened.
Some research assistant was like, you cannot do this study without including Exorcist 3. It will not be good science if you do not include this movie on there.
That's so funny. Yeah, I mean, I'm down for it. You know, I love a niche. I love a niche.
But yeah, I looked through your list and I was like, I'm going to do Exorcist 3. And I didn't see Exorcist on there. And I was like, wait a minute. Because The Exorcist is my favorite movie of all time. Not favorite horror movie. It's my favorite movie of all time.
Wow.
I'm so glad we expert, though. Yeah. Because Sydney actually has seen this movie before. And I'll let her speak for herself. But she said earlier, had some trouble digesting it, and so did I. And so, like, I think we need an expert this episode.
I will make you love The Exorcist because it is not an easy breezy watch. You don't just like sail through this movie unscorched. Like, this movie will, if you like really watch it, especially on rewatches, it will destroy your will to live.
I'm ready.
In the best way.
God. It did make me legitimately nauseous at a few points.
It's rough.
Well, okay, before we get, put a pin in nauseous because I want to go back to that. Sure. But real quick, here's the IMDb log line in case you've never heard of the movie The Exorcist. Welcome to the horror genre. When a 12-year-old girl is possessed by a mysterious entity, her mother seeks the help of two priests to save her daughter. And you'd really think that that's the scope of the movie, but goddamn is the scope of the movie much larger than that.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that shit at all.
I knew.
I thought it was like Indiana Jones at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Very The Mummy in some ways, like, was bringing some of that in.
That vibe, that sandy vibe. You know what? I don't think there's English spoken in the movie for 15 minutes, at least. The first 15 minutes, I don't think there's any English.
Yeah.
That's which I can imagine going into it being like, where the fuck are we right now?
Especially in the 70s.
Especially in the 70s. Yeah.
I was a little bit prepared for that because I tried to read this book. Oh. I tried to read the book. And the beginning of the book is also like, it's like an interview, I think.
Why are we in Iraq? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know if they're in Iraq. It's like an interview with a priest and he's talking probably about, like, finding Pazuzu or whatever.
Is that the necklace
dig
or the little statue?
Yeah, or the statue. But it's I don't know. I looked it up.
Pazuzu is the name of the demon, but the little artifact that he finds, that's Pazuzu as well. And the reason that it frightens him so badly, which you don't find out until literally an hour and 40 minutes into the movie, the reason that he is so freaked out by finding this artifact, because at first you're like, what is this guy's problem? Is he like having a heart attack? Like, what's going on? Pazuzu is the demon that he years prior had to exorcise out of a little boy in Africa.
A month-long exorcism.
It took 3 months and it almost killed him. So when he finds that totally artifact in the beginning, he is like, he knows that it's an omen, that it's not over.
Pazuzu's back.
Yeah.
Okay, wow. Wait, I have a question blood. Before we go too far into this. Did y'all watch the director's cut or the normal one?
Good question.
We the director's about cut this
is my favorite, but last night I watched the original cut because I hadn't seen the original cut in so long. It's only 8 minutes shorter. Like, they did not do much with the director's cut. But I did watch the original last night just to so that I could have both perspectives because I was like, I forget what they even added.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll get into that more if there's anything that you remember that's in the director's cut because like
I remember everything
that was in. Okay. Good. Thank God. Thank God you're here because I only had a chance to watch this one time yesterday and I watched it on my computer, which like it's my new computer. I'm very excited about it.
Gorgeous. Congratulations.
Video camera is very crisp now, but also I missed like so many things that I read about in my research and I was like, well, maybe it would have been good to put it on the screen. but there's like a whole part, like a whole scare that I don't remember happening. And it's pretty huge part of the movie. So I don't know where I was. I'm a little worried about it. Maybe it was only in the director's cut.
Was it the crab walk?
Yes.
Yeah. That's only in the director's cut. Or okay. It's called the version you've never seen is what they called it. I don't know why.
Okay. But yeah. I was like, I've heard of that part before watching this. And I never saw it. And then I was like, God damn it. Did I like miss all the iconic shit watching the normal one? Because I wanted to cut 12 minutes off my watch time because I was lazy. Anyway,
well,
so that makes me
I didn't even
it.
Know there was a director's cut. So I just watched whatever version was on
HBO
Max. Max now?
Oh, yeah. Just
Max.
Oh,
yeah. Please wanna... lose the HBO. Right. The most iconic part of the channel.
Just on Max now, where you can find HBO.
Wait, just called Max now?
Yes! Yeah. They announced that. Can you believe?
Horrible.
That's so stupid. Anyway,
horrible brand recognition.
That's literally, that makes me irate, actually.
Discovery actually doesn't want you to recognize HBO as a brand anymore, clearly.
Like, they want you to go to Max.
They're
and
calling
watch
it Discovery
shows.
Max now.
Right.
Max Discovery. The worst brand. Anyway, okay, we can talk about the movie instead of horrible branding. I don't want to forget this, so I want to say it now. When we had Lauren on the pod, we did Cloverfield, which is a movie that is world renowned for making people vomit. And now we are having you on for a movie that is also world renowned for having vomit in it and also making people vomit. So I feel like it's
That's
like this cute theme with you guys. And I really like that.
We just like to puke.
You guys are such cute pukey girls. Love that for you.
It's like our thing. We have a weird kink. They make you vomit for like two different reasons because Cloverfield makes you vomit because the camera work
motion sickness
is chaotic. I do like that movie though, but Exorcist makes you want to throw up because it is so disgusting. Mm-hmm. It's so disgusting.
God. It went and further than I ever thought it could go.
Yeah, and it really just looks like pureed vegetables, you know what I mean? Like, for on-screen vomit, it could be chunkier, you know? I feel like they went a little bit easy, but the way it keeps going on or near people's mouths and like the texture of it's so like thick looking,
it's
like
steamy,
it's so gooey
too, because that room is freezing. They actually had the room be freezing cold. It was actually those actual breaths that you could see. It wasn't any after effects, you know, so it was actually really cold, so that pea soup would actually steam, and like it made it so much grosser when you could see the like actual steam coming off of this
so
vomit
disgusting. And I also I like that it doesn't look like normal vomit, that it is this like weird thing, because it's like
demon,
it's like an ectoplasm goo thing squirting out.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, she's a possessed 12-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're making her, you know, tri-tip and sandwiches or whatever. Probably at best, if they're feeding her during this, they're like spooning soup into her mouth. So makes sense that it's pure soup coming right back up.
Yeah. Or she's on a feeding tube, because at one point she does have they have like
a nasal cannula or whatever it's called.
All
that's
right.
A feeding tube? Okay.
I know. It's like, medical expertise. Did I watch a medical show recently? Oh my God. Look at me. I watch the Good Doctor every
Monday. Bones
energy.
Oh my God. Yeah. I guess back to the beginning a little bit. That I just was so thrown by this whole first like 30 minutes of the movie. It's like really, it's so, I was kind of distracted by how big everything was, like how many people they wanted me, the scope, how big they wanted, how many people they wanted me to care about, like in these 2 hours. And like I did care about them, but I was like, wow, I'm learning so much about all of these different people, and then I'm forgetting because it's been so long since I've seen them, you know. But it does come together, I guess. But
yeah, I remember growing up and watching The Exorcist, and I would always be like, oh, I got to slog through the first part of it until I get to the good stuff. And now my favorite parts are everything leading up to the actual really scary stuff, because that's where like the like juicy meat is all in like the first hour and a half, where you're learning these things about these people, and you're learning, you know, a lot of people go into The Exorcist, whether it's their first time seeing it as like an adult, or you know, the first time they saw it in the 70s, like whatever, they go in thinking like, I'm gonna see a horror movie, not realizing they're going in to see a drama that is terrifying, because that's what all this movie is just a straight drama. It's about like a mother who no one will help, and she's desperate, and she's just begging people to please help her, please save her daughter. It's about a priest who's struggling because he's losing his religion, which has to be just terrifying for a man of the cloth, you know what I mean? Like,
that's his whole life,
all these people, and they're all brought together by this just horrifying experience. And I think today, if a movie like this would come out, people would call it like highbrow horror, which drives me nuts, you know, because it's
elevated,
like,
horror,
elevated highbrow. Yeah, this like, you know, The Witch would be one of them, like Midsommar, this Witch. Sort of like, so do I. Like, I love dramas that are also terrifying.
Yeah, I know that's horror, a good way to reframe it, because I was thinking it was going to be like a nonstop horror fest, just because like there's so many older people that are that I know that are like, I watched The Exorcist and it ruined my life and I can never watch a demon movie again and blah, 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 blah. And so I was expecting more of that, but it is insidious. I think they do a really good job like setting up the horror of it all.
They make you care.
Yeah.
So that by the time it's happening, it hurts you.
Yeah.
Because like Reagan is the cutest, sweetest girl, the sweetest 12-year-old. She's got like Chris, her mom is just a great mom. Like you have all these wonderful scenes with them together. And
she should have shut the door though when she was screaming at the dad and the operator on Reagan's birthday. That she should have shut
probably
the door.
Should have shut the door.
It was the 70s. Nobody knew.
Nobody knew that kids listened to things that happened in the house.
I saw a Reddit post that was talking kind of a little bit, not really about this, but it made me think. The title, like, you're expecting, okay, it's about The Exorcist. You get there, it's an exorcism, and we meet the mom and Reagan, and it's like, okay, these are the main people, and yeah, sure, that's fine, but the title of the movie is The Exorcist, and the most fleshed out character is actually the priest who is doing the exorcist, and so it's really about him. Like, he's the main character of this movie.
He's the titular character.
Titular.
And I was like, oh, that's cool.
I kept finding myself Googling the exorcism instead of the exorcist, which is so stupid. Sorry. Just shoot me in the face.
No, the exorcism of like, Emily Rose. And I also was like,
but it's the exorcist. You're so right. I never thought about it that way. And they really do flesh out the two priest guys.
Yeah. Well. And Exorcist 3, actually, you guys, I can't wait for you to watch Exorcist 3.
Oh, I'm excited.
Exorcist 3.
Skip 2 completely,
don't
right? We
do not.
The internet also told me that it was like Linda Blair came back
really,
and they were like,
bad.
That poor Linda Blair just jumped out right there.
Yeah. Don't do it. No, it's bad. Exorcist 3 is based off the novel Legion by William Peter Blatty, who wrote The Exorcist.
Yeah.
So it's written by the same guy who wrote The Exorcist. It's a sequel to The Exorcist, and it follows Kinderman, who is the cop who's investigating the strange desecration.
Sure, I guess.
The Father Dyer, who is the like kind of flamboyant, sweet priest who ends up surviving at the end.
Ooh,
and they become in the director's cut of The Exorcist. it ends with the two of them sort of like meeting and they walk off together and they're like, do you want to see a movie? Because remember when Kinderman's asking Father Paris, like, do you like movies? Yeah. So they go see a movie together. They become best friends. And it follows them like 20 years later or whatever. And they're still seeing movies together and talking about their old Father Karras friend who, spoiler alert, passes away.
Yep. Sorry. Sure. haven't seen the movie yet. Don't know the tone of anything, but sounds a little gay to me.
A little bit. Sounds but like gay, in right? the gay. Best way. In mm-hmm. the best like gay friendship. Like what's the opposite of toxic masculinity? Like healthy
fun bros.
Fun bros.
Boys, bro is
where it's dudes. Just like yeah, homies where it's like
that homies. Make out.
Kiss, homies that make out. The homies good night.
Kissing the homies good night. Like that's the opposite of toxic masculinity.
Just like two straight men who aren't afraid to say like, you're my best friend and I love you. Like that pure, aww, delicious relationship.
I would argue that one of them is definitely not straight, but we'll get there. We're almost there.
Yeah.
Once we get to segment two of the movie, which is the Father Karras part. Okay, real quick shouts out though to the makeup artist, which I wrote down his name in particular so I would remember it. And then I don't remember it. Hold on. It's Dick Smith. There we go. Shouts out to Dick Smith because the older Father Maron was only 44 when he did this role, and only at the end did I realize he was in aging makeup. Something about him when he was in like the excavation area, like I was like, that's an old ass guy, good for him out here acting. He's 44 years old
living his life. No, he's just 44.
Yeah, Max von Sydow,
9 years older than me.
He's a youthful, sprightly man doing an incredible acting job. Like when he's like shaking, taking the pill, you know what I mean? But yeah, apparently he had like really hard time getting jobs after this because people thought he was that old.
I could see that. Yeah.
Poor guy.
He did such a great job as this ancient old man. He's like, I can do old man again.
I can't.
Just let me put the makeup on. Just let me do
it. A bunch more old men at this point. Yeah.
I don't have to stop there. At a picture of him old, like, because he's older now, because it's been like,
or he passed.
Yeah.
Died. Okay. Yeah. It's the picture is not in black and white. So I wasn't sure on IMDb if he was still with us.
I think he passed 2 years ago. I want to say it was during, it was 2020 or 2021, because I feel like I was in quarantine when he passed. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Or legend. I was gonna say, like, they predicted what he would look like old, like very
truly.
Well.
Yeah,
he's kind of freaky.
Well, I think that's where a lot of people go wrong with old age makeup these days is they try and do too much. They try and do like prosthetics, and they try and like I understand like older people, they have bigger ears, they have bigger noses, like because those things keep growing. Like I get it, but like be subtle. Like the art of subtlety. It's the same. There's another thing, you know, this movie, The Exorcist, really kind of wrote the what's the word I'm looking for? They kind of like
wrote
yeah,
the, book
the blueprint.
Blah, blah, blah.
They wrote the book. They wrote the blueprint for exorcism movies after this. Like everyone takes from The Exorcist. It was the first one to kind of do it, at least do it as like effectively as they did. But I will say I've never in my life heard a demonic voice that is scarier than Pazuzu, and it's because it's just a woman's voice. Like it's just an old 98-year-old crone who smoked a pack a day for 70 years, and they layer her voice on top of her own voice, so it's not like manipulated, it's just her voice, and then they, you know, they'll layer it. But
her name is Mercedes McCambridge. Dope name, just saying.
Great name. Yeah.
Radio and film actress. And apparently she, I hope this is fake, but I think it's true, swallowed raw eggs and smoked cigarettes, like we said, and drank alcohol in order to achieve that demon voice.
Yeah.
And apparently gave up her sobriety to make the voice seem authentic.
Good. Worth it.
Worth
horrible.
It.
Horrible.
Okay, and then dedication to the arts.
Yeah.
Suffer for your art.
Terrifying. But also, like, there's all these weird curses with this movie. And, like, I'm sure Ashley, you know all of them. I just know a few of them. But like another weird tie-in to this, like with like weird deaths associated with the film, like years after the film, this lady, her son like did a murder suey his whole entire family. So just another thing to add to the list of cursed items coming from The Exorcist.
Well, I can very quickly run through, because I don't think The Exorcist was cursed really. And the reason that they think that the movie was cursed was Karis's mother, the actress that played her, and the actress that played Burke Dennings both died before the premiere of the movie.
Yeah.
Karis's mother was ancient.
She was really
and
old.
Burke yeah. Dennings was not in the best. The actor who played Burke Dennings, which I did write his name down somewhere.
Jack McGowran.
That sounds right, actually. They, you know, he wasn't in the best of health. He died of the flu during the London flu epidemic. Ellen Burstyn and Linda Blair did both get injured, but like, I don't think it was the devil. I think it was that they didn't have, it was irresponsible stunt work is what it was.
Yeah, because William Friedkin was like a fucking crazy man, right? Like the director.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't make it far through IMDb trivia, but just in the first few, I did see when Dominic got Damien got vomited on his face. That was not supposed to happen. That was a stunt gone wrong. It was supposed to be on his chest. And like there was one moment where William Friedkin like fired a gun right next to one of the actor's ears to get a startled reaction out of him. And he was like, you don't need to do that. I am an actor. I will simply act startled. Yes. So clearly there was some like wibbly wobbly things happen over there.
I will burst a fucking eardrum. Okay. Also, who did he slap in the face to? One of the actors? The director slapped
him in
the
face. I would assume it was Ellen. I would assume it was Chris McNeil, the mom.
Yeah.
So that she has that fucking bruise.
Well, because she did say, she was like, I loved working with him because I did some of the best work of my career. Obviously, the end result is incredible. It was a really magical experience. I would tell him to take it easy.
Sure.
So, yeah, take it easy. At least he's not, you know, like, we all know. We've had our discussions about the director of Jeepers Creepers. We've had our discussions.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Some directors fucking suck. And he is teetering on the edge of being team too much, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like it. But
the one thing that is weird, though, the curse-wise, there's two other, like, ones that are kind of weird. This one, though, I think is kind of a miracle. So they call it a curse. At one point, a pigeon flew into a circuit box and caused a fire on the set that destroyed the entire house. And everything except Reagan's room, which was untouched. Now, everyone says, like, it's cursed, it's cursed, it's cursed. But also, like, they were shooting the exorcism scenes at the time. All they needed was that room, and it didn't burn down. It seems like a miracle to me and not a curse.
Right.
I understand after the fact that it's like it's cursed, and it's like, well, thank God it didn't burn down the one room we still needed to shoot in.
Yeah.
Like it seems
well,
lucky.
That would not burn down.
Looking out for this film.
Yeah, and the demon was like, I have to see it. It looks so good.
I'm looking so scary in this. Like, gotta get this through to print.
It's my big break. Not gonna fuck it up. Come on, guys.
Well, was that because that room was, like, fully refrigerated? Like, did it have special metal refrigerator walls? I don't know how they do things, but maybe that protected it.
The only thing was
One
of the male nurses in the scene where Reagan gets the spinal tap, so when the needle goes in her neck and the blood squirts out, it's rough.
Fuck really
that
didn't scene. Like it.
Fuck
really
that.
Didn't like
I hated that shit so much. Continue.
The male nurse in the scene who helps like get her in, strapped in the bed and stuff, he might be an actual serial killer. He was a radiologist.
What?
That's how he got the role, because Friedkin wanted everything to be authentic. So if you see a doctor or a nurse in the movie, it's probably an actual doctor or nurse. Father Dyer, who is kind of the flamboyant, fun priest who introduces Chris, he's an actual Jesuit priest.
Oh, wow.
But so this guy was a radiologist. He was convicted.
And Ellen Burstyn, she's a real actress. Can
and
you
she's
believe
a real
it?
Actress, if you can believe it. And mother.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah, I just saw an opportunity to make a little joke. I had to seize it.
He was convicted of the murder of a reporter. He did kill a reporter in 1977 named Addison Verrill. He's now a free man living who knows where. He's 82. But he's also one of the main suspects in a series of unsolved slayings of gay men in Manhattan known as the Bag Murders from the 70s. William Peter Blatty, or Friedkin, I'm sorry, William Friedkin made a movie about it called Cruising with Al Pacino.
Stop. That's
which
so
was
weird.
Also the inspiration for the latest season of American Horror Story, New York City.
No way.
Starring on that Kim one. Kardashian.
Starring Kim Kardashian?
No, no, no. The one that the latest one that came out. The new one that but I did see the news that Kim K is
I don't even know.
Sorry.
Is
sidebar.
This gonna launch
so
Kim K like it launched Lady Gaga?
I'm so interested to see. Maybe I'll start watching American Horror Story again.
Kim K.
I mean, I'm gonna watch
it. Little acting roles. If you ever saw her on Drop Dead Diva, she has a short arc as a con woman. I love it. But like, I would not say acting is her
forte.
Yeah, it's not her strongest
searching
talent.
For
she has so
a word
many
that is kind.
People, but I would not say that is what she should be known for. So I'll be very curious to see what she does with presumably a whole season of TV. But again, maybe it's going to be one of those like Psycho-esque things where they're like, actually Scream, like, we told you she's the star, but guess
but
what?
She dies in the first episode. Yeah.
We'll see.
Oh, yeah. Well, is she like trying to do like what Paris Hilton did? Is she still chasing Paris Hilton's tail here by getting into horror?
Is not a lawyer to be, so who knows? They've all got to find their own niches.
Oh my god, I don't know. That's a lot of damning information for the set being cursed, though.
It's
about a lot of stuff.
You can definitely make a case for the set being cursed. Absolutely.
I feel like Poltergeist had way less and everyone's like, Poltergeist was cursed.
Poltergeist had more like freak accidents. This is
true.
More like, this was a magnet for spooky, sinister people, maybe.
Yeah. Well, Poltergeist was cursed because, like, in Poltergeist, the Poltergeist exists because they fucked with dead bodies. And then in the movie Poltergeist, they fucked with dead bodies because they used real skeletons.
It was cheaper.
That was surely.
They invited cursed. Something into the atmosphere on that movie. On this movie, it sounds like just lots of interesting characters were like, what if I seize this opportunity to be a little freaky weirdo.
Oh my god. But they use this stuff so well to their advantage, because like one of the, like you said that this movie like wrote the blueprint for exorcism movies. It was also like life-changing for like makeup and effects in horror movies, but also they did like incredible marketing things here. They like used all of this shit that was going on as like a ploy. They like let the religious people who were incensed by this movie kind of just like boost the movie, so it got to these insane levels. Mm-hmm. Like people went fucking buck wild for this movie. I was reading this like old New York Times article. People were lined up for hours in the wind and rain.
They're taking buses to other towns after it was banned in their town.
And also like the balls to release this film on December 26th,
right?
Unreal.
To be like, Merry Christmas. Join us.
Join us.
Okay, as someone who saw Uncut Gems on Christmas Day, like,
Uncut
what
Gems.
If you would?
Uncut Gems.
Oh my god, it was horrifying. It was a horrifying experience. My dad and I got in a huge fight. He was yelling out loud in the theater because he hated it so much. He was like, "Oh my god!" Like out loud. It was horrible.
Have you seen the 1970s version of Black Christmas yet?
Yes.
Yeah.
A couple years ago.
Well, because this past year, Christmas. My mother-in-law was living with us, and we were trying to find a Christmas movie to watch. And I was like, my favorite Christmas movie is Black Christmas. And she was like, oh, I've never seen it. I want to watch it. And my husband was like, no. And I was like, we should. And we did. And it was probably a bad idea. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it.
She loved it.
She actually did like it, but it definitely ruined the Christmas vibe. Like, that movie's pretty, I mean, much like this movie, like, some of the things that are said in that movie are like, how did they get away with this? Like, how, of course people were upset. Like, this movie, I mean, some of the things that come out of, I think that's what it's so shocking, is that they really go there. They really go for it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wish you wouldn't.
Masturbating with a crucifix is a very aggressive.
Yeah.
And masturbating is like a very tame way of saying I would say like a friendly description almost.
Yeah. Stabbing herself in the vagina with a crucifix, saying, let Jesus fuck me. And then pushing her mother's head into her crotch and saying, lick me.
I was dying. I was like, I was holding my BB dog and I was like, BB, don't look.
Don't listen.
Like, don't look, BB. Oh my God. And then her face just covered in blood. And I was like, I have seen things I never thought I would see.
I can't unsee.
Yeah. I did like that she used the word cunting as an adjective. Yep. I wasn't sure exactly what it meant in that term, but I was like, I am vibing with it. I am storing it away. I'm maybe going to try it out at some point. We'll see. So.
Add it to your vocab.
Yeah, I mean, it's creative.
Back in the day, that's how they used to say
she would have loved that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is closest.
Especially those priests with like their fancy little purple sashes, etc. Like, they were a little bit serving cunt.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Wait, okay, I need to talk about gay things. It's really important. So we talked about the first priest. Now we need to talk about Father Karras, who won. I think he's hot in like a short, angry man kind of way. But like, maybe he's not short, but he's just he looks
small,
like a boxer, like
stature.
They said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love his character arc. I think it's really, really sad and also really
devastating.
So one qualm I have with this movie is I think that like the non-director's cut might suffer from some cutting room floor issues, because there's some shit that happens that doesn't make sense. And maybe I missed something. So Ashley, you need to come to my rescue.
Are you talking about his mother's death?
Yes. She died, but he was like, I should have been there. I wasn't there. But he went to the insane asylum. I think that's where she was to check on her. What was happening?
So what happened was, and this movie does do this from beginning to end, and it doesn't affect you at all until about halfway through the movie, because the movie actually spans several months.
Yeah.
But you don't realize it. It seems like it's all just like, this is happening at the same time as this, is the same time as this, is the same time as this. But they'll give you little clues to tell you that quite a bit of time has passed. And with Father Karras, so his mother lives in New York City. He lives in Washington, D.C. It's pretty far. She doesn't want to leave. And he obviously has his job in D.C. So he...
At Georgetown, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Georgetown. And he... obviously doesn't want her living there by herself, but much like every old person we've ever known, they don't want to leave their home. And so something happens to her. They explain it in the movie where
they say like she broke her leg.
Yeah. So basically something happened where she had some sort of breakdown and she was put into this mental institution. His uncle is the one that put her there. So he goes to see her. He leaves work and goes to see her. And she's saying, you know, Demi, why you do this to me? Demi, why?
That was a really good impression.
And he's like, Mom, I'm going to get you out of here. I'm going to take you home. And she's like, no. Well, you don't know. He does take her home. He takes her out of this hospital. He takes her home, and that's why they say she died in her house and they didn't find her for several days. So he did take her.
Did I black out for part of the movie?
Whatever you need to tell me, I accept.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. it's already 2 hours long, so that's fine, I guess.
Yeah, he actually ends up taking her home out of the hospital, and she dies alone in her house. That's just another thing that weighs on him, that like he,
I mean, wasn't leaving her there where she was, her. Though, wasn't an option either. So he shouldn't feel bad, you know. Yeah. That didn't seem like a safe space for her to be.
There's also what I think is, well, actually, it has to be it. William Peter Blatty.
It's thank you. Because the director is William Friedkin, and then yeah. The writer is William Peter Blatty.
There's a nod to what happens in Exorcist 3 in this movie. At one point, so when Karis's uncle is telling him that his mother like lost her mind and was talking to the radio, that's a nod to the subject matter in William Peter Blatty's Legion, which is the inspiration for Exorcist 3. Because wow. In that movie, there's a lot of, especially the book, but the movie as well, there's an idea that like you can talk to the dead through the radio, which is obviously an actual paranormal idea with electronic voice phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of that in Exorcist 3, but I'm almost positive that's a nod to what comes later.
Well, that makes a lot of sense too, because like obviously Pazuzu, oh God, I love saying that.
Pazuzu is a good name.
Everybody say Pazuzu right now. Just to
Pazuzu.
Feel it.
Pazuzu.
Pazuzu. Yeah. What does that better? Name come from? Is that like it really in the Bible or some religious text? Or
so I have an encyclopedia of demons somewhere that my husband got
that's
me.
So
once.
On brand for you. I love I that.
I'm gonna have to look it up and see if he's in there.
I don't know. It's just the most. They were like, "What's the funnest demon name?" Pazuzu.
Yeah,
that's
oh, we need one with a lot of
Mesopotamian religion. If you were wondering,
that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense with everything. Yeah. But yeah, it makes sense because I like, okay, Pazuzu is a demon. They're like got to be all knowing in some regards. So maybe he just looked at Father Karis and he was like, yeah, like I know your shit. I know about your dead mom. I'm going to fuck you up. Or maybe he was also on the radio whispering sweet nothings into her and made her die. You never know.
Made her lose it.
She could be all around the town.
Could like he anticipated that Dominic Karis was going to be involved in the case down the line and was like, let me get ahead of it. Or like he's just generally sowing discord all over.
He could have some master plan because he was involved with the other older priest before. And then now he's luring in this guy
and
having a lapse of
faith. Essentially trying to get Marin there. Because when Marin shows up at the very end of the movie, the iconic scene where he steps out of the cab and he's in the light of the window, which is like the cover of the movie.
Yeah.
And so when he shows up, all you hear is Marin. And like the demon's waiting for Marin. The demon is trying to get to Marin. So if it knows it's got to get Marin there and it goes after, I believe Pazuzu calls... It's the most iconic line of the movie, your mother sucks cocks in hell.
Yeah,
but
it was iconic.
A lot of people don't finish the quote, which is your mother sucks cocks in hell, Karis, you faithless slime. The fact that he's losing his faith, it's easier to attack him. It's easier to, you know.
Yeah, I will say, I thought that was such an interesting element. I feel like... like you said, this was really the blueprint for exorcism movies going forward. And while I was watching it, I was thinking about how, like, The Conjuring really presents things in a similar way, where they're like, here's the family, happy before everything happens. Here are the Warrens doing their little thing and hanging out. Uh-oh, when are they gonna collide story-wise? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But... I don't know. Like, I always really struggle with The Conjuring movies. And there's something about, like, the presentation of... the religiousness of them that like just doesn't quite vibe with me. But this movie, I was like way more engaged in that to some degree. I don't know if it was just like done a little less like hokily, maybe.
It's not as saccharine sweet. I feel like sometimes the Conjuring movies get
earnest
a little
about it all. But the way that they really were like holding back on that for so long. Like, no, an exorcism is not the answer. Like, no, there are all of these other things that we need to do first. Like, no, there are all these other steps. Like, that made me like more willing to accept it as like a last ditch effort also, where like, yeah, you see that literally nothing else has worked so far, and that even the people bringing this step in are like, I don't really think this is gonna work. Like, how could this possibly be the real answer? But also, what else do we do? We have no other like things in our arsenal to try than this, so why not give it a shot?
No, I thought I they love like that.
Mm-hmm. They built this really great path for you to get on board no matter where you're coming from.
Because I feel like everybody jumps straight to an exorcism almost. Like, I don't know. I'm watching, Sydney, what's our show? Evil. Sorry, I couldn't remember.
I love that show.
It's so
that's
good.
That's the TV show that we're going to be doing.
That's the TV show.
That's why it came up this episode.
But like, I feel like exorcism is like, you know, we're going to do an exorcism today and tomorrow. It's not that easy, but like they're so commonplace. And so twofold question, like one, more of a comment. Seems like exorcisms are not that like common or done at all at this time in the world of the movie. And also I read this thing, and this is a question, like, were people not familiar with the concept of an exorcism at that time when this movie came out? Because I read something that said like they were like introducing the concept to people
pretty
with
much
this movie.
I mean, it was you know, it's an ancient, well, not ancient, well, everything's
pretty
ancient
old
now. Yeah, it's pretty old. The rite of exorcism is, you know, unless you were trained in the Catholic faith, like, I don't know how you would really know about the exorcisms. And
they probably didn't want to like put that on blast too, because it's kind of a dark, scary side.
Yeah, it's a super, and you know, it's one of those things where, I mean, the church didn't really talk about demons in that way. And it was something where like this movie brought exorcisms back, kind of like in the real world, like
back,
more
baby.
Exorcisms. They are back.
Oh,
baby.
The satanic panic for the 80s. This really is like, yeah, helping set the scene.
Oh, fuck. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. This,
yeah,
movie
so this
had
really
too big
introduced.
Of an
yeah. Well, and what you were saying earlier about like, you know, the movie really, really, really takes its time and really forges a path to the finale, which is the exorcism, and it is horrifying. Movies today don't have a lot of patience.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't do that very often. And another thing about this movie that I really appreciate, and it's something that like after like the mid 80s, we don't see as much of. They really like, if you miss something, they don't give a shit. They're like, watch it again. Sorry.
We're,
you know what I
like,
mean?
Remember
like,
20 minutes ago when
exactly.
I brought up Pazuzu?
They don't like flash back. Yeah, exactly. So like one scene in particular, the first time that Karis speaks to Reagan, and a voice comes out of her mouth, and it is the voice of the homeless man from when,
yes,
he was in New York City visiting his mother, and
I
he
love
says,
that,
you know, like, will you help a former altar boy, father? And it's shocking. But if you're not paying close attention, you're not going to know what that voice is. You're not going to know.
Yeah.
And they don't do a thing where they like flashback and they're like, remember? It's like, no, if you don't remember,
yeah,
tough shit, watch it again. And that's something that I really miss, because like, for example, like Interstellar is a beautiful movie. It's fine. It has a lot of really cool real science in it, or scientific theories. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that movie is that it unfolds and you're like, wow. And then they're like, and let me explain it to you for 20 minutes. And it's like, well, the magic's gone, brother.
Thank
like,
you.
I can
beat
watch
it
again. Yeah. If I don't understand it, I'll rewatch it. Like,
yeah,
movies just, they treat
that might be
like
a unique
dumb
quality to you though, because if I don't understand
true
it, I probably won't rewatch it. I'll just be like, that was weird, and move
well,
on
that
my
was
way.
Weird.
I think
yeah
that, like,
what a strange
they,
thing that happened there.
That's true.
I think movies today probably coddle the audience more because
definitely
we have the attention span of
worms.
Well, Yeah, worms. Maggots. I was going to say a squirrel, but I don't know a lot about the intestine of a squirrel.
Like
it could
squirrels,
be pretty good.
They're like storing nuts away, remembering them months later in the winter.
Yeah,
so a squirrel would actually really enjoy The Exorcist.
A squirrel
would be
the peak audience. That's really who they're hoping watches this film.
The squirrel would be like, I really appreciate how they don't force me.
They really didn't cuddle me with this, and I really didn't
cuddle me with all this information. They just like let me figure it out on my own. I love how we all went like this when we were talking about a squirrel.
That's what squirrels
little
do.
Little squirrel hands. But yeah, no, like, I don't know. I'm glad we're having this episode about the movie, because when I first watched it, like, I was in a really weird headspace. I'll tell you later. So I just was like, wanted it to be over just because I was just, it was a lot of things going on. But like, framing it the way you framed it also, like, in the same world as, like, not world, but like genre of like The Witch or Midsommar. I also am brought to mind Saint Maud because it's also religious. Yeah. I love those type of like slow burn movies, and that's really what this is. I think I was expecting it to be like horror fest, which it is. Like, it has so many fucked up things that we already discussed, so we don't have to talk about them again, but I see them in my mind's eye when I close my eyes now. Thank you, William Friedkin. But like, it's not that. It really is that slow burn story where you're like, where is this going? But I feel uncomfortable, and I do love that, so I'm liking it more talking about it. Anyway,
it's a movie that you will find yourself loving it more and more with every rewatch, because you will notice new things every time you watch it. I've seen it probably 30 times. Last night watching it, there was even a moment where I like, it was you know what it was? It was the artifact that he finds, because I wrote in my phone, I was like, why does the artifact affect him so much? And like, I wrote it down and I was like, I'll look it up later. I'm going to Google it. But I didn't have to, because I was paying close attention. And I was like, oh, he knew Pazuzu because he already like had to go face to face with this. And so when it so it's like, I've seen it 30 times and I'm still like, oh, that's why. It's just really cool when a movie can like pack that much of a punch in 2 hours.
That's what makes a movie rewatchable. There's many things. Maybe like it's just a like House of Wax. It's a fucking joy ride the whole time. And you're like, wow, amazing. And there could be Easter eggs in there too.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
How much chaos.
Yeah, I watched that for the insanity of it all. But also like that's great that there's layers. You watch it again and you see this tiny blink and you miss it thing. Like, another thing I didn't notice at all until I was reading about it is that subliminal messaging of the fucking demon face that was actually like a makeup test. Like, when I only noticed it one time and I thought that like my eye was blurry, but it's like, how many times does that happen? I never noticed that.
Twice?
Once or twice in the original cut. 3 or 4 times in the director's cut.
Okay.
Yeah, I think in the original cut, it's like in his dream, when his mom is like coming up from the subway and like mouthing for him, there's like a 1 second flash of the face. And then she goes back down into the subway. And then during one of the like exorcism possession scenes near the end, you get like a flash of it for a second.
They show like it's Reagan's face and the demon's face at the same time. And so I was like, why is her eye look so big? One of them looks all big. And then I found out later on. But yeah, I just love little Easter eggs like that. Like, it's kind of like annoying. You're like, why did you put all of these little tiny things? But it's like an Easter egg hunt. It's like a little like treat. If you put in the extra effort, you get this
now,
extra little cookie.
The next time you watch it, you're going to be like, don't blink
for 12 minutes, because I'll have to watch the director's cut next time. Okay.
I will say one thing I would have appreciated being explained just like a little bit more is like, I would have liked a little more of an introduction to Burke maybe than before I realized who Burke is and that he's the drunk guy at the party. Like, he was just drunk guy at a party, and there had been a Burke mentioned was as far as I could piece things together. And it took too long to be like, oh, same man. Why was he watching her daughter? Or like, what is the deal here? Like, what
confused.
Is the involvement?
I thought Burke was Father Dyer.
Burke is actually the director of the movie that she's
met. Yes.
Yeah. And I got was that after in the fact.
That
but...
piano room part was Burke in the room during that?
Well, he's okay, the guy so that guess... gets he's like he got, using the he got escorted out Nazi. Before yes. the pee thing before the urine.
Got, okay, so the reason I got confused is drunk. Because like Regan comes down the stairs. And she says, you're going to fucking die or whatever. And then she pees her pants. Love it. But she says it kind of to Father Dyer, if I'm wrong. Isn't he standing close?
She closest? Says it. This is interesting. You who will not catch this unless you're paying attention to the conversations that are happening to the part at the party. She says that to an astronaut who's about to do a mission to the moon. And she comes downstairs and she says, you're going to die up there. And then she pees on the carpet.
Fuck.
It's okay. Horrifying.
That makes so much more sense because I was literally so confused because I was like, I thought that was the guy who died. Anyway, I thought she was saying it to Father Dyer because he's standing in that room as well.
He is, yeah.
And he's someone who's like in the movie more times. And then they're like, but I didn't know his name was Father Dyer at the time. I was very lost. I was very confused. There's many
like
people.
The singing priest.
And when they say
the
singing up one. There, yeah, when they say up there, I thought he meant like up the stairs because that's where like Burke ends up dying. Or well, I think he probably has his neck broken and then he's thrown out the window. We don't find out for real, for certain. and so then I was so confused when Father Dyer was like around later and I was like, oh, Burke must have been that little demon man who was calling the butler. Was that the butler guy that he was calling a Nazi?
Yeah.
And I thought the butler guy must have been Burke for way too long. And then I was like, wait, his name's Carl? Like, what's happening here?
There's a lot of people named very quickly.
There is. And they really do not spoon feed you shit. They're like, nope. Oh, you didn't catch it? Tough. Actually, this is interesting. So it is an astronaut. He's there. You know, Chris has, you know, she has a dinner that she's invited to at the White House. Like she's famous. Yeah. And, which is also like a really cool, like, what other movies do you see where like the mom is a famous actress? Like just like the setup, it's not in mm-hmm. the middle of nowhere in a country and the mom's a stay at home mom yeah, or the mom's different. A farmer. It's like, no, they're in the city. Like you can hear all the people outside. Like this is happening like in the middle of it all. It's not secluded. It is like your neighbor could be going through this, which is very scary. But
and it adds to the medical part of it too, because she's like a famous actress. She has access to all of the best doctors that there yeah. are, no question.
Johns Hopkins is like right there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Really not far away.
Yeah, sure they even
DC
cut
has
out
good hospitals too.
In the director's cut, you see more hospital visits. You see more times that she goes to the doctor and the doctors try and explain like, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Actually, one of my favorite scenes is cut out, but I'll save it for later because I add Matthew Lillard to it. But this the astronaut in that scene, they're just like if you listen to the conversations, you get the idea that there's an astronaut there. And then Reagan comes down, says, you're going to die up there. And she pees and whatever. And then we kind of like never hear from the astronaut again. Well, in the next movie, William Peter Blatty says that this is technically the direct sequel to The Exorcist. It's a movie called The Ninth Configuration. And William Peter Blatty's The Ninth Configuration follows Billy Cutshaw, the astronaut from this party, to an institution after he aborts his mission to space and is dragged screaming from the capsule of his rocket, having a full mental breakdown. Whether it's because he remembered what Reagan said to him or for some other reason, he was fully convinced he would die on the moon.
And he didn't because he didn't go. So way to take your fate into your own hands, Mr.
Seriously.
Astronaut. Good for you. Very sexy.
Go off, king.
Very
take we charge. Love a confident king. Yeah.
He said, I know what I'm about, and what I'm He's about like, is not dying on the moon
living.
Today.
Yeah, I'm going to throw a fit. And sometimes we just need to pitch a fit, and good for him.
Saves lives.
Truly.
The occasional Jesus tantrum
I
so
never
important.
Would have known that.
Yeah.
Okay, we were talking about Karis so I could talk about a gay thing, but I just want to say, after the death of the mother, it's very, very sad. Father Karis and Father Dyer are lovers and no one can tell me any different. And their scene that they have in his weird little dorm room house that he lives in is so like intimate.
With the Shiva's so regal, whatever liquor.
Yeah. And he takes his shoes off for him and they hold it's a so hand sweet. For a second. And I just, in an, and you saw how sad Father Dyer was at the end. I don't know.
Yeah,
we can talk about it more
you
later,
could
but...
totally make an argument that they had a closer relationship than just friends. Absolutely.
I feel like that's very there. Priestly of them to be like, we're both priests, so we can never consummate anything, but like the potency of our love for each other remains.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a very, you know, you can never consummate anything, but everyone has that sort of hole to fill. Oop, that was kind of everyone. Everyone has that emotional hole to fill. Mm-hmm. Like you want
everybody's emotional hole needs filling.
Exactly, that's so and true. That's I'm why always saying these that. Men do.
Always saying that.
I'm always saying that twice a day.
Sometimes three.
Sometimes three.
Oh my god. Okay, so we've talked about Karis a little bit. We'll get into him more, but I want to talk a little bit more about little Reagan. I keep calling her Regan because I have like a niece Regan. And her name is pronounced Regan. And so I've just wholesale gone on the other side of things. I'm sorry. But anyway, Reagan. I just want to say that it's not fair that the puppet thing is happening to me because I've never done anything wrong in my entire life and I've never touched a Ouija board. Well, and that's how all this shit happened is if you fuck with the Ouija board. And I don't fuck with the spirits. I am very kind and respectful unless the door opens on its own and then I scream expletives into the night. But like, this is how this happened because she was fucking around with a Ouija board alone and she is a child.
Don't blame Captain Howdy.
I'm not.
Captain Howdy is Pazuzu.
Wouldn't it be funny though if Captain Howdy wasn't Pazuzu?
Wouldn't it be hilarious? Nice, friendly ghost.
He's just there. Who's like,
that was Casper, actually. And then Pazuzu stepped on their romance.
Speaking of Casper, did you catch the Exorcist reference in Casper?
Yes, I don't, with the priest.
The priest goes in, he comes back, and his head's on backwards.
Oh,
and he's like, piece of cake, piece of crumb cake. Yeah.
Now
well,
there
was an SNL character and also an Exorcist joke.
Wow.
Multi-layered.
Adding, yeah. Casper's a masterpiece.
I love that this is adding dimension to my Casper watch. It's very important content.
Yeah, Reagan is literally a delightful child. I'm not a huge fan of children. And I, children in movies especially, boy, they can make or break a movie. And they have. And Reagan is, I mean, she's a force.
I mean, Little she got Linda nominated Blair. For Best Supporting Actress. Like, this was an Oscar level performance. The Academy thought, at least.
Definitely.
And all the different ways. I mean, when she was sweet, she was so adorable. And so, like, the conversation that she has with Chris when Chris is putting her to bed and she's asking, she's like, you know, Burke can come if you want, because she notices her mom's spending a lot of time with the director of this movie. And she's like, what are you talking about? And they have that little conversation. It's just so real and so adorable. And she's asking, like, what do you want to do on your birthday? And she's like, I don't know. You know?
She's like, classic little girl. I want a horse. Why can't I have a horse?
But like, also
she's
saying,
a little spoiled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I say something petty?
If I were the daughter of a famous
please.
Actress, I would want a horse.
Everybody wants a horse. But the petty thing I was going to say is I think the other reason I didn't realize who Burke was because like Reagan thought that she was dating Burke. The mom was dating Burke. And I was like, well, it can't be that drunken bastard.
Drunk little rat.
Little worm boy.
That comes around.
It's got to be that hot gay priest. Anyway, I figured out while I was confused. Reagan, God damn it, girl. You confused me.
Actually, Reagan canceled after all.
Okay. But also, I want to name... if I'm going to talk to a ghost, his name's going to be Captain Howdy. I mean, his name's
adorable.
I want to know if she named him Captain Howdy or if he introduced himself as Captain Howdy. Where was the Captain Howdy lore? Is it in the director's cut?
Bonjour.
No, it's not in the director's cut. I should reread the book. I should have reread it before I came on here. I'm just going to read a book real quick.
Your homework, Ashley. How dare you?
I will say that the book, the book and the movie, I mean, some of the scenes are word for word. Like, they really don't change much. Same with Legion as well, both books. And they're really, really fantastic. They just flesh it out even more. Like, if you thought, like, oh, it's not fleshed out enough, one, are you insane? Two, if you want even more details.
Yeah. Yeah. Read the book. Okay. Yeah, I started it. I started it and I was like, what's happening? I didn't understand what was happening. And I was like, you know what? I don't think I'm in an exorcism place in my life right now, or exorcist place in my life right now. As I had just read The Growing Things by Paul Tremblay. Yeah. And that's also got some like exorcist related vibes going on in it. And I was like, you know what? Maybe we're not going to do two in a row. Maybe we're going to give ourselves some
maybe
peace,
take a little break,
grant ourselves some grace, read a little gay romance book in between. And that was the right choice. I'll come back to you, William Peter Blatty. Don't you worry. I just think the subtle way that, well, it's not even subtle, but like the way that they start introducing how bad things are getting with Reagan is just so affecting too, because she just, like, first she has her little accident during the party, like, that's embarrassing, but like, whatever. Also,
well, but even before that, there's the moment where she like has crawled into her mom's bed and her mom wakes up and is like, why are you in here? And she was like, my bed was shaking.
Yeah, and there's that noise in the attic and you're like, oh, rats, damn. Like,
and even at the beginning of the movie when Chris goes into her room, it's really cold in there, the window's wide open and she has no sheets on her at all, and like Chris goes in and closes the window and covers her up.
Yeah, I will say, when I googled Pazuzu to see like what culture that was from, it did say that Pazuzu is like a wind demon. So I thought that was really interesting with the way the window keeps like being opened by itself and it's so cold in there and the blankets and blah blah blah. Like,
well, and there's that one shot where the blanket gets like sucked out of the window. Do you remember that? It's very scary.
I don't remember.
Also,
it's quick.
Okay.
I feel like our collective best friend of the pod, Alex, would maybe be possessed by Pazuzu, because she also likes it arctically cold in any place where she is ever. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
But has she ever spoken to someone named Captain Howdy?
I feel like she wouldn't be opposed to, but
I feel like I would have heard about him if she'd spoken to a Captain Howdy. Yeah.
These are the important questions.
It's going to get to her some other way. Okay, I have a question. We talked about the Pazuzu figurine at the beginning. I feel like we've mentioned the little necklace or charm that becomes a necklace, but like, I didn't really understand what that was about in general. Like, one of my only notes is like, what was that about? Is it a talisman? Does it bring Pazuzu?
Yeah, it's Saint. I think it's Saint Christopher. Which I have a Saint Christopher. My father, my grandma gave my dad a Saint Christopher necklace, two of them, one for each tour he did in Vietnam. So my sister has one of them, and I have the other. And Saint Christopher is the patron saint of like travel and protection. You take Saint Christopher with you wherever you go, and he's supposed to protect you. And it's just a Saint Christopher necklace. And I think that the importance of it is all throughout William Peter Blatty's trilogy. There's a Saint Christopher medallion in The Exorcist, The Ninth Configuration, and in Legion. So I'm wondering if that's just the through line. Yeah, because I think the most important part of it is basically when it gets handed off to Dyer at the end, that he has that piece of Karis.
And Catholics, I just thought just it love was that interesting. Shit.
Yeah,
my grandma gave me one of those when I studied abroad.
Oh, to protect you. That's nice. Yeah. But it was like Marin found it in the beginning with the Pazuzu figurine. And then it did was he? Like
he did.
Yeah, he like brushes it off with the little brush. Yeah.
And he was like, that's weird because it's like not in the right time period.
That's right. That's right. I keep getting I also get the medallion mixed up with his little pillbox.
Oh yeah. It does look very similar. Like when he's in the bathroom at Reagan and Chris's house and he pulled it out for a second. Mm-hmm. I had like a moment of visual confusion until he opened it up and then I was like, oh, okay. But I felt like the medallion had like hopped between characters at some point where I was like, how did this person get it? And then it gets like left behind on Reagan's bedroom floor. Like it felt, I wasn't sure the accounting for it. It wasn't the same one every
time. See, that's another thing where I'm like, I gotta watch this again and figure out if there's some symbolism with the St. Christopher medallion I never even noticed.
Karis has one, right? That was Karis's, right? That
he I thought had. It was Karis's.
At the end it is, but then I was like, I guess it's I'm not just the assuming same it's the
one.
Same.
Yeah. Okay. So I didn't assume Catholic, it was the same. Yeah, I didn't assume it was the same one because I know that those are like a common thing. So I think that was what the issue is. Because I don't think that Father Marin and Father Karis hadn't met each other.
That's
before.
What I thought, which was why I was so confused. But I guess for people who know St. Christopher, maybe in the beginning that's just meant to be like a visual cue common. That like this object that is so scary, that is evil, that's making dogs bark, blah blah blah, like it needed some sort of medallion of protection near it because it's so evil or whatever. So it's meant to show like this object we had been protecting against it, now it's been uncovered, maybe those two objects have been separated from each other, like
yeah, it's interesting that, like, with the anachronistic St. Christopher, like, buried with that ancient Pazuzu, it makes me think that maybe that ancient Pazuzu wasn't buried as anciently as they thought. And maybe they, like it was ancient, but it had been discovered before, and then someone else buried it. I don't know.
You know what? We actually kind of nailed it. So I found it.
Oh, my God. We're so smart.
Got it.
There's a common misconception that the medal found by Father Marin in Iraq and the one worn by Father Karis and his mother are one and the same. However, that's not necessarily the case. Many people have asked William Peter Blatty about it. William Friedkin's reason for adding the medal to the film was to add resonances to the film. So, like, almost like synchronicities, I guess.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Just to link it in the audience's mind.
Yeah, maybe. It says, according to Blatty, instead of asking how the medal got from Iraq to Father Karis, people should really be asking how a contemporary Christian medal got into an archaeological ruin from pre-Christian, don't know that word, in the first place. When Marin finds the medal in Iraq, he speaks in Arabic and the English subtitles say, "This is strange." However, in Arabic, he's actually asking, "What's this doing here?" And Blatty believed this question would never be answered. So it's actually, it is a mystery. And they are two different medallions.
Well,
wow.
Thank you for
answering. We were all right.
Yeah, we did some problem solving together. We all
guys,
really,
we did it. Let's wrap this
put our
up
heads together. I think if we were in person, we would all put our hands and then we would do like a 1-2-3 team
Pazuzu
situation.
Oh, I was thinking we would put our hands together and then like the power of our brains, it would like a light would emit from our hands.
Ooh,
together. That's what I was
like
picturing.
I mean,
like the Wonder Twins kind of with thing. The rings, kind of like that. Yeah. Anyway, well, we should try it sometime.
Yeah, the next time we're all four together.
Oh my God, so fun.
Put our hands in.
Sounds beautiful.
What about, a character we haven't talked about yet. What about Chris? How did you guys feel about Chris?
I thought that what you said earlier about the many months passing, it's really complicated by the way that bruises on her face for so long. Because then I was like, oh, short time period. So that's my Chris note. But other than that, I thought she was good. I thought she was like a lovely mom. I didn't understand what her movie thing at the beginning one, but I was like, oh fun, it's an archaeology movie, it's a Hollywood movie, it's also
where is this going,
a possession. Yeah, I was like, interesting, okay, there's so much more to this film than I knew beforehand. I did like her desperation to help her daughter. Like, I thought that came through really loud and clear. And the way that she is, like, turning to anyone that she can, like, begging for help of Father Karras. And when she meets with him, like,
That's a really great scene where she's like, she literally at one point screams to like the heavens, won't anybody help me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've been, because he says like, oh, I can't just do an exorcism. Like, you can't, like, it's not how it works. And even if you could, like, you have to, you know, there's a process. The Catholic Church has to okay this. Like, and even if they did, like, you're risking the child's life. And Chris is at her wit's end. And she's like, please. Like, just meet my daughter, like, do something.
Oh man, yeah, I mean, that desperation, like, I know this is an extreme case, but it just like reminded me of the American healthcare system in general. Yeah. And the desperation, yeah, that it breeds. I was like, this is just how people feel dealing with any doctors these days. I've been dealing with like some family stuff, and it's just like, isn't anyone here actually there to help, you know?
Yeah.
It's so frustrating. So she has to turn to alternative medicine to find her answer. But I mean, God, it must be nothing more terrifying than seeing your child like completely change like that. And I think she did a really good job acting that out.
Yeah, Ellen Burstyn's incredible.
Ellen Burstyn's the greatest. The first time I ever, I think, saw her in a movie actually was, she was Sandra Bullock's mom in The Divine Secrets of the Yaya Sisterhood. She was
wow.
And that's one of my favorite movies ever. And I was like, where do I know this woman's face from? And I had to look it up. And I was like, oh, Vivi.
Between this performance and her performance in Requiem for a Dream. This woman.
Who's she in Requiem for a Dream?
She's the older woman who's the mother who's addicted to pills, diet pills.
I have blocked out that movie so thoroughly from my brain. So you said that and I was like, don't register anything. And that's for the best, because holy shit. Disturbing. Talk about disturbing.
Do you like my fan?
It says no. I do really like your fan. I like that you're just like dramatically wafting air up.
Well, this is my, like, when I put my makeup on and I need it to dry really fast. But like, mm-hmm, I got a little sweaty. I got a little schwitz. So I'm just giving
it. Was it? Is, you probably got like that because we had that beautiful brain blast moment where we all were right.
It was the heat from the brain. The brain blast that got me.
Little Pazuzu magic wind action.
Yeah.
One thing, my husband actually pointed this out last night, how incredible Blatty is, like, as a director, or not Blatty, Friedkin is as a director and a storyteller, particularly in this movie. Not just like with the way he shoots it, because some of the shots in the movie are just like gorgeous. Like, how dare you? But
the X-ray scene.
Oh, yeah.
That was so good.
What this movie does to you. Remember earlier when I was like, this movie will chew you up. It will spit you out. It will destroy your soul. The film has already broken you down with bright lights and loud sounds and flashes of terrifying faces. Meant the horrible, like, conditions of Father Karras's mother, the mental institution scene, piss, blood. It's already like really got you like thin skinned.
Yes.
And then the exorcism happens and you're already raw. Like, you're already
totally,
like, overstimulated by all these loud sounds and lights. So by the time you get there, and I really think that it's an exhausting movie, and I think it's on purpose. Like, he's trying to get you to feel even a small amount like Chris McNeil or Father Karras feels, like, just completely hopeless.
He's grinding you down.
Truly. By the time you get to the exorcism, you're like, gee, okay.
But
now we
got to
do this.
I texted Sydney and Chelsea yesterday, and I was like, okay, fuck, there's 30 minutes left in the movie. The exorcism is about to begin. I'm so scared. Like, I'm not prepared for this, you know, because it's just already been, you've already had the vagina stab. Okay, like, how could it get? I was like, I thought I've seen everything mm-hmm. I could ever see.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that is a really good point about, like, exhausting the audience so that when you get to the point where they're like sitting on the stairs, just taking a breather, and Father Marin had been like, let's rest for a minute. Like, we have a moment. Let's take a moment. We're gonna need it. He's like, my hands are trembling and I need to go have my little pills for my nerves in the bathroom. Yeah. That makes complete sense that it's like, especially because, like you said, there are so many amazing shots in this film. One of them I really felt like was when you just are seeing them from one perspective and then like looking through the balcony of the stairs to the other, where you just get that moment. It's like just on them and you're like really in their perspective for that moment. So to like be exhausting the audience so that like you're feeling how they're feeling, the visual camera aspect is like putting you inside their head. That I think was really well done. But I have to say my favorite part of the possession and exorcism is the moment where we actually see Dominic Karras's mom on the bed. Like, it's kind of a quiet moment in there. And it is only that one moment where she's just like sitting on the bed, like peacefully, calmly, but it's like not a jump scare, but like, so I don't want to say startling, but sort of disturbing. Like, it just like feels like really wrong and like something horrible is gonna happen. Yeah. It's rough. That's a rough moment.
It really is. Of all, and I've seen so many at this point of all the exorcisms in any movie, it's the one that's still on the 30th watch, my hand is on my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the things that are coming out of her mouth, which are horrific, but also just like when his mother's voice comes out of her and she's saying like, Demi, why you do this to me? Demi, why you leave me, Demi? And he's like, you're not my mother. Like, he is
breaking.
She breaks his heart. Like, it is so hard to watch this man who is a priest who lost his faith, which again, like, how scary is that? And he lost his faith because the world is so shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The world is so shit. He's devoted his entire life to God, literally his entire life to God. And God is going to do this to his own mother. Like, God is not going to provide him with what he needs to take care of his own mother. Like, then fuck God. Like, I'm so angry. And then for him to lose his mother and this fucking demon to have her voice come out of its mouth. Like, it's infuriating to watch.
Because
Father Karras is such a sweet boy. And I just want to hold him. Mm-hmm.
Remember that part where they just cut to him boxing really fast and then they cut away? Mm-hmm, Love that for him.
He's getting it out.
I will say, I don't really know what the whole, other than now that I know what the sequel is about and that it's like buddy cops on the case, the whole like murder mystery aspect of it like felt not out of place in the movie because I feel like it kind of tied some elements together, but it was just also there.
Well, it also like makes, like, we know that the demon inside of Reagan's body killed him, because like how else did that happen? But like, now that's like the cops are going to be questioning her daughter for killing a man, and it's like Chris's like very close personal friend. I think it adds to the horror of it, but yeah, I drama. Didn't like care about that cop man that much, but I did like
the cut of his jib. Kinderman is a really, I think Kinderman is a really sweet character. One, he's a really good detective. There's that scene where he and Chris, he finds that figurine, the little clay figurine that
belonged
to Reagan at the bottom of the stairs. And he basically is like, I'm going to go check out this house. Like, obviously something happened at this house. So when he gets in there and he sees the other clay figurines and he realizes like this belongs to this young girl, the way he's talking to her, he knows that she knows something, and it's like he's a really good detective. Like, it's a really like great scene. Like, you could see what's happening in his head. And I don't know if
boots on the ground investigative work.
Exactly, like really great solid detective work, Kinderman. But Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if you were to cut out all of Kinderman and he's not in the movie at all, would it make a difference?
I don't think the plot would like lose too much, but I can see how the grander scheme of the story that's being told over multiple books, multiple movies,
is possibly a
crucial part of that.
Yeah, that's the glory.
Kind of like the medallion, like setting up stuff for later on.
There are some things in movies like that where, especially if they're based on a book, where you get little pieces of it and you're like, oh, I'm so good. Like in It, where the It chapter one, I think, I don't know if it's Billy or his brother, but they have a little toy turtle. And if you've ever read It, turtle comes into play quite a bit.
Yeah,
so it's like little things like that.
Yet, but I read the Wikipedia synopsis, so I would know what the fuck was going on.
I know what the turtle is, okay? But yeah, it's like that where it's like, this is a gift for you, the reader.
Here's a little kiss.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
Sure. For the fans of the original source material.
Exactly. Here's a little Kinderman for you. He sounds like a candy bar when I keep saying his name, just like saying just his last name. He sounds like he's a delicious treat.
Me hungry.
Sorry about it.
Okay, I have a couple questions for you because you've watched the director's cut. How much of more exorcism do we get in the director's cut, or is it elsewhere?
It's elsewhere.
Except the crab walk.
The crab walk comes in actually right after Kinderman leaves, when Chris goes to the door and she closes the door and she like lets out a big, because she knows like, holy shit, this detective's now investigating us. And
it's not just that my daughter is possessed, maybe gonna die stabbing herself with a crucifix. It's also now she's wanted for murder.
Now I know she killed him.
Yeah.
How do I stop
this
cop?
Denied it before,
anyway, so she closes the door and she's like, oh my God. And then I think like one of the her staff comes in or something. And then Reagan comes down the stairs.
Oh.
Totally bent backwards, crab walk style. And just like, like she makes that noise and she comes down the stairs. And it's literally that fast. It adds nothing to the movie at all. It is quite scary. Like when you see it, you're like, holy shit. But that's it.
Yeah, apparently William, the director, Friedkin, he like hated that part because he didn't think that it looked that good, because you could see all the like wires.
Can you? I don't even think I've looked that closely.
Well, they like edited it apparently for like the new releases. So they like went back in and like in post brushed out the little wires so it wasn't so apparent. But they just didn't have the tech to hide that as well back then. And so that's why he cut it from the theatrical release, which like fair, but also I saw a screenshot of it. It looked fucked up. So I wish I had seen that part. I got to Google it.
I was going to say, Google it. It's like 8 seconds long.
And I'll be like, ooh. And
then, but it is quite that. It's effective. Like when you see it, it's pretty scary. That's added in. There's more shots of the scary Pazuzu face that throughout the movie. There's a couple scenes. There's a couple more doctor scenes, including my favorite scene of the entire movie. I was very upset to see that it wasn't in the original cut. And then the sweet scene at the very end. The director's cut doesn't end as sort of bleak as the movie. I mean, I know like Reagan, you know, and her mom drive away and everything's fine, but like Father Dyer just sort of like walks off on his own, heartbroken and it's sad. But in the director's cut, he walks off with Kinderman and a friendship is born, and you know, it leads to
that's
the
cute.
Future. But yeah,
I guess though, but like if you didn't like care about Legion, you'd be like, what? Okay. That's cool that they're friends.
Yeah.
Seems strange.
Yeah. I wonder what I thought of it, because I saw Exorcist 3 when I was a teenager. So I don't remember like what I thought of that ending. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know if I thought anything of it, if it was just like, okay, now they're friends.
Yeah.
Cool. But after you see Exorcist 3, you're like, wonderful.
We love bros being dudes.
Yeah. It's so important to have a bestie.
Yeah.
It really is.
In this scary, scary life.
What was your favorite scene that wasn't in the original?
Well, I was saving it for the Matthew Lillard section.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
I think we might be just about ready for our segment. Are there any last thoughts?
I'm not ready.
Do you have a question?
Oh, excuse me.
I have something to say. Okay. I just think that, like, I have something to say. I just think that the biggest highlight of, like, this whole end scene for me is the makeup work. So I just want to do a little shine on Dick Smith again. I love that that's his name. Dick Smith. But also, I have a little Easter egg that I know because I saw our friend Rebecca on Easter, and I was talking to her, and her dad is famed horror and other genres makeup artist Rick Baker.
Oh, I love Rick Baker. We had her on the show one time.
Yeah, I love him so much. He is a total sweetheart. And so
shout out the episode that she was on. Give the episode a little boost.
Our magic episode, which is a little known movie with our guy who also sent an Exorcist movie. Yes, Anthony Hopkins. If you've seen The Rite, that's an Exorcist movie. But anyway, yeah, it is a film that exists and it's bizarre and you should watch it and you should listen to that episode. It was from Doll Month, which was a big month for us in 2021. Anyway, the only thing I really knew about The Exorcist, like, before watching it was that Rebecca dressed up as Reagan for Halloween one year in high school. And it was, like, spot the fuck on. It was really epic. Absolutely terrifying. Like, vomit dripping down her face.
Yeah.
Literally disgusting. I'll send you a picture, Ashley. You'll see it and you'll throw up. And she was at school like that all day. And I just thought, like, you know, it's a classic horror movie. But actually, The Exorcist is the very first movie that Rick Baker worked on. And he was just 23 years old because this came
Baker, probably because
it came out in 73. And yeah, it was one of his very first movies that he ever helped out on. So he was part of the makeup team, but he was not the head. It was Dick Smith who was the head, but he was learning his craft and honing it.
Did Rick Baker do American Werewolf in Paris?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, baby.
Okay. Uh-huh. Or London. I'm sorry. Paris is the comedy parody. Okay, yeah.
I want to watch that one too.
It's not great. Yeah, okay. So I mean, there's so many, like, cool names in horror makeup history, whether it's like Baker, Savini, you know, Nicotero. Like, there's so many of them, and I can never like keep track of, like, who did what. But yeah, Baker,
he did American Werewolf in London, best transition scene, crazy. Oh, so good. I can't wait till we do that on the pod.
But also, speaking
of Easter egg.
Speaking of parodies, I would like to give a shout out to Scary Movie 2 and little baby Natasha Leone as Reagan in that movie.
Oh my God. Is it her?
What? I need to rewatch Scary Movie 2.
Well, because the priest is played by
that guy. Like, I know you when you see him, you're like, you?
What the fuck is his name? He was in Airplane and
the main guy in Airplane.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Marlon Brando?
No, he was supposed to be in it.
Oh, I just Googled Natasha Lyonne's Scary Movie 2 and I was seeing things about Marlon Brando cameo.
Oh, Marlon Brando.
I was like, let me take a guess.
What's his name?
Leslie Nielsen. God, I couldn't think of his name. I didn't know. Oh my God. I didn't know that was Natasha Lyonne. I love that.
See, I was a Scary Movie 3 girly because that, like, came out at the squint essential. That's a new word. The squintal essential time for me in, like, whatever high school, middle school. But I need to revisit the classic prior films.
Scary Movie 2 is the best because it's got the little hand.
Oh, a strong hand.
I hate that. I hate that part. I don't remember Natasha Lyonne.
It's the very beginning.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
they
why.
Just
she's like twerking though. And they're Voorhees. It's the Voorhees house. It's like a real fun.
Oh my God.
Like,
it sounds like
it's so good.
A riot.
It's a mess. Yeah, it's a fun mess.
It's a beautiful fun disaster. But yeah. Anyway, I just was really impressed by the makeup and the effects at the end and the head spinning around. It's just like a rubber dummy of Linda Blair.
Yeah.
They twist its head around. And I think that's really cool.
But some of the shots, I don't know how they did. I don't know how they got the shot of her floating. I can't see how they did it. when she rises off of the bed and she's just
they kind of cut it so you can't see the top of her.
That's true.
If I remember. So there must be like,
well, because there's sort of there's several angles.
Yeah.
There's several angles. There's like an angle above her where you see her floating off the bed. And then there's an angle on the side where you can see her entire body. But it doesn't look like there's anything flat underneath her holding her up because her nightgown is hanging down. It's just one of those things where it's like, I don't know how they did it.
Yeah. They did a really great job with this, like with especially with it being the early 70s, like it's fucked up.
Yeah. It's really effective. I mean, you know, and there's some movies that I wish they had a restraint in this movie because it was the 70s and there were no special effects. But it, I think, did him a service because I think like, for example, in The Conjuring, I thought the exorcism was pretty frightening until like the chair lifts up and then it flips upside down and then it just gets a little too much. Like there's too much happening, too much CGI. Yeah. Like I feel like if you can't, if it's an exorcism scene, if you can't do it with practical effects, you don't do it. Like Exorcism of Emily Rose, all the contorting that she did, I can't think of the actress's name, the girl from she's from the lead Dexter. In Exorcism. Yeah, from Dexter. All that contorting was her. She was contorting her body. Oh, really? She like, yeah. So
like, I heard that movie's good.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
Okay. That's one of the, I don't like exorcism movies usually. I don't really like religious themed horror movies like that's like the whole get, you know, like I love The Witch, that has that too, but it's different. I don't know. Saint Maud, also super religious. I don't know. I just don't like exorcism movies that much. So, but I'll try that one.
We do like exorcism TV shows though. So watch Evil.
I know. Okay. I watch Evil not for the exorcisms. I watch it for the sexy, sexy lead characters. That's why I watch it.
We have a sexy priest thing.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
That's it.
Sexy the Exorcist priest. TV show that came out a couple years ago. Was the first season, at least. I don't think I watched season two. The first season of it was like legitimately good. And there are two very hot priests.
Ugh, love hot priests.
You've peaked
like,
my
interest. My God. Yeah. Very hot. Very hot. One of them openly gay and hot.
Oh, ooh,
wow. That makes speaking my language. Yeah. Okay, well,
speaking
then
of openly gay,
it's time to perfectly segment time right now. How could this movie be gayer? I open the floor to you all.
Well, I'm very on board with your theory that there was something going on with the two priests who had that nice,
I don't hate it,
quote unquote, friendship.
Father Dyer and Father Karras, there was love. I also think,
if they had like a love relationship, like a physical,
maybe just like a lingering hand touch, even just to suggest that there's,
they have to let it linger
deeper there, you know
they
what
have
I mean
to let it linger. And actually, I mean, like, you know, I've read the book, so I know that canonically Father Dyer is not a gay man, but like he does sing show tunes.
Very
and
Broadway.
He does say that his version of heaven would be like everyone loving him as he sings show tunes. Like,
hooray!
I do know straight men that will sing show tunes all day long.
Absolutely.
But it's bringing some flavor that I'm willing to project onto.
Totally.
For sure. I also think Chris could be some flavor of gay, the mom. Like, we know she had this ex, but seems like she hasn't dated in a long time. That's kind of why her daughter's maybe trying to hook her up with Burke.
I get big bad gay choice. Vibes from Chris. And I also think that who's picking up on these gay vibes, who is in the house all the time, it's Sharon, the assistant, played by a woman named Kitty Wynn, which
unbelievable. Gay name.
Why the fuck else would she stay around for all that shit? Why else? If she,
well, she was getting
in love
paid.
With Chris,
but
oh yeah, she wasn't paid. But is anyone getting paid enough for that?
I don't think the movie is very gay. There's a lot of slurs alluding to gay sex.
They do say the F slur. Yeah,
Yes. Yes.
It's not loving. We should have done this during F Slur
November. I know. I literally thought about that as soon as they said the F Slur. I was like, F Slur November. Damn. Yeah.
It's shocking when it happens too. But yeah. And maybe Pazuzu is picking up on Karis.
Some undertones being like, oh, I'm going to be super homophobic to you because I know that as a priest, not only could you possibly get in trouble, but also maybe you've been repressing some things that I'm bringing to the surface. Mm-hmm.
I would say that my theory is canon now that you've said that.
I accept it. Yeah,
Pazuzu was being homophobic. Obviously, he was already being homophobic, but he was being homophobic because he's all-knowing and he knew.
Yeah.
Is Pazuzu like the opposite of the Babadook?
The anti-Babadook.
Yeah.
Like, are they each other's foils?
Yeah. The Babadook, gay icon.
Queer icon.
Yeah.
Pazuzu.
Homophobic.
It sucks because Pazuzu, I feel like, is a gayer name just in general. Like, it feels like the word pizzazz is in it. And I just, like, I feel that that makes sense, but that maybe that's why he's so homophobic, because he keeps getting looped in and he's pissed off, or he's just also,
he's like, actually that has nothing to do with me, that's a completely different language and culture, but everybody keeps projecting it onto me, now I'm really mad about it
and now I'm gonna say the F slur all the time. Yeah. That's no excuse. Pazuzu, you bitch. God damn it. He's going through a lot as an undead demon. Whatever.
And like the thing is, there is some girl on girl action in this movie. It's just unfortunate that it's just like mother daughter.
Yeah.
Right.
But I would, that's, I wish you hadn't said that. Homophobia projected onto a possibly homosexual character from Pazuzu. He's like picking things up. He's seeing the proof. He's seeing something that's leading him to believe that this is a good tool to use against these people. He's confirming all of our theories, really.
Pazuzu has, it's a come to Jesus moment right now. And
come to Pazuzu moment right now.
Keep calling Pazuzu he, but I feel like Pazuzu's pronouns would be they, them.
Yeah, no.
Pazuzu does have a statue with the raging heart on, though.
Did you guys see this in the movie? You said something about that earlier, and I went, huh? Is there a visible boner?
Yes. Yeah. Pazuzu has a real big
raging boner. Looked away. Oh my god. Not for my eyes.
One scene in head, but
that one scene that the religious community, the Catholics, went really fucking wild for was the desecration scene in the church where the statue
had the titties.
I forgot about that.
Had the titties and that a big old dick.
And they're like bloody and horny.
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 They were horny. Ugh. Okay. Do we have any other gay thoughts we'd like to share?
I mean,
I'm okay to move on. I would love to hear about what your favorite scene is. I'm so curious.
Yes. Oh my god. Okay, Matthew Lillard, where would he fit into this classic?
Yeah, okay. So I wouldn't give Matthew Lillard a huge part. I love Matthew as well, but I think he's better at the laughs than he is the drama, and this movie is very, very drama heavy. So
okay.
I think I would make Matthew Lillard Dr. Klein, who is the doctor that...
Who is a murderer in real
life? No, okay. That's the... I would instead... No.
He gets to be the real life serial killer.
Yeah, in the 70s. No, he's the doctor that... I'm trying to think of a scene. The doctor is asking her, like, do you keep any drugs in the house? And that kind of thing. And he's he helps. He doesn't perform the spinal tap, but he's like there for that. Dr. Klein is who I would make Matthew Lillard, because there's a scene, it's like not funny, but it's kind of funny, like even Chris laughs a little bit at it. And it's before she gets like fully possessed. It's right before the scene where she grabs the psychiatrist by the balls.
Oh,
love. So it's at the doctor's.
We just glossed right over that. That was great.
She really rips those things off. Anyway, so
for her,
I believe it's the same scene-ish. It's around the same time where he's asking, like, do you keep drugs in the house? And she's like, of course I don't. Like, I would tell you, blah, 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 blah. Anyways, he tells Chris,
that Reagan is using some extreme language. And he's like, does she say anything like, you know, does she say stuff like that at home? And Chris is like, no, I don't think so. What do you mean? He's like, I mean, some things that she said were wild. And Chris is like, well, you know, give me an example. What specifically did she say? And he answers her. He says, specifically, Mrs. McNeil, she advised me to keep my fingers away from her goddamn cunt. And Chris like laughs because she's like, oh.
What?
Because this is, like I said, before Reagan's completely like,
yeah,
you know, zoned mm-hmm. out. She's just sort of like peeing and being strange. And yeah, she literally, as the doctor's sort of examining her, says, keep your fingers away from my goddamn cunt. And I have an exorcist shirt. I couldn't find it. That is Reagan's demon face with a coffee mug. And it says, keep your fingers away from my goddamn cup.
Oh my God, I love that.
That's so good. I love
that. And I think Matthew Lillard would deliver that line really well. Mm-hmm. Wow. Scene with Chris.
I'd love to see him straight face it.
I love that. Yeah, I thought that sounds great. Yeah, I mean, I too am like, we don't need to put Matthew in this one. I love him. We don't need him to put him through this. We don't need that.
Make him a doctor at the beginning or one of the fun
party guests, though.
Yeah,
he could have made him the astronaut. He could have cameoed.
He could have been one of the students in the like her film at the beginning. Protest.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Just something quick and sweet. And you're like, oh, there he is.
There he is.
Love him. See you later.
Glad you didn't get hurt.
Okay, I think that's fair. We keep it small. We keep it minimal. Sometimes less is more. Well, that brings us to our third segment, which is who is the dumb bitch of this movie? And I would like to, I can't blame Reagan, so I'm going to blame Captain Howdy. No, it can't be Captain Howdy. His name's too cute. Who is
he? He's like innocent, first of all. And second of all, if he's not, that's Casper. If he's not innocent, then he's not a dumb bitch because he's like, actually, I found a 12-year-old girl who's playing with respect. A Ouija board, and I'm like taking advantage
Have
of this moment to come
rank.
Be Pazuzu here.
Yeah,
I'm this so is my sorry. Way in to get to Father Marin. Actually, now I'm in the right city at least. But
whoever dug up Pazuzu can be the dumb bitch.
So Father Marin all along.
Yeah.
Well,
like, why are you going
calls him
around
over to find the dig? I guess.
But still, why are you going around stealing other countries' artifacts?
Yeah, and you're old as shit.
Maybe
like retire.
Archaeologist.
I feel like it was probably something to do with like the British Museum or something. Let's be honest.
Yeah. That's true. Maybe we should just leave things where we find them.
My question, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
How did he die? How did Father Marin die? Did he have a heart attack? Like, we don't see him die. He's just
we
dead.
Don't know.
We don't ever know.
I mean, he comes back in the room. Reagan is completely untied. So anything. Could happen too. I mean, she could have broken his neck like she did with Burke. She could have
just sucked the life force out of him.
Sucked the life out of him. Hit his head. She did hit his head once.
Novelty straws.
Yeah, she's got a silly straw.
He obviously has. I don't know what the pills are he's taking. I assume it's like heart medication because I don't know. They're so tiny. They're really tiny pills. They're like the size of my birth control.
But.
Their
he
birth
just
control
took a little
pills.
Birth control real quick.
Yeah, this one was actually a tough question for me because I think everyone in this movie is just a person doing their best.
Like, he's a dumb bitch because he's mean and he's homophobic.
Yes, okay, so that's kind of what I went to because I was like, maybe Burke, but even Burke was just an alcoholic because he's lonely, you know? So I was like, why? Burke's still even
was,
doing
like,
his best.
Fun and, at the party.
So I ended up with Pazuzu as well. Like, he messed with the wrong little girl, first of all. Reagan is strong as shit.
She did hold on really long
so
time.
Much.
She scratched her name into her own belly.
Yeah.
She wrote help me on there. Help that me. Was a really spooky little scene.
What do you guys think? Pazuzu?
Yeah.
I do think
bitch.
Burke deserves a little bit of a nomination for going up to Reagan's room. Although I guess if I was left alone to watch a possessed child and I thought I was needed upstairs, like perhaps I would also do that.
Well, yeah, maybe it probably
yeah, we don't
him
know
up there
how.
Was like, I need your help. I need your help.
Yeah, that.
Then of course he's going to go up there.
Well, and you got to think, like, she could emulate anyone's voice. So she mm-hmm. could have been, it could have been Chris's voice saying, like, Burr, can you come up here for
like,
a second?
And he's like, wait, I thought Chris wasn't home, but hold on, let me just go see. Yeah.
Yeah, or it could have, like, been another voice of, like, a scary intruder, and he wanted to make sure she was okay. Yeah.
Could have been anything. Could have done anything to get him up there. I do like that she never, like, talks about it. That she's just, you know what I mean? Like, Pazuzu's never like, yeah, I killed him and I do it again. Like, it's not spoken of. It's just mm-hmm. sort of like, I killed him. What?
That's
I'll kill you
to
too.
Figure out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we do see, like, whatever happened to Burke is, like, for the most part, what we see happen to. Well, actually, did he throw himself out of that window?
Karis did throw his plan. It worked
is
perfectly.
To accept it in and then
bring it into himself and then kill himself.
I think he gets a little smart bitch
was so
nomination.
Sad.
The anti bitch award
so
for
sad.
Him.
It was
like
really
he has
sad.
To sacrifice himself. Ugh.
But you know, Pazuzu knew that it would bring them together because Pazuzu says earlier in the movie, like, what an excellent day for an exorcism. And he says, you'd like that, wouldn't you, Karis? And she says, very much. Like, it would bring us together.
Yeah.
And he said, you and Reagan? He said, no, you and us. So Pazuzu,
Pazuzu
I think
is smart,
is
but he's just homophobic, so he's naturally a dumb bitch.
Yeah, I mean, Pazuzu's a smart guy, but that has nothing to do with being a dumb bitch.
Yeah,
so true.
Right.
Intelligence has
so
nothing
true.
To do
you
with
understand.
Yeah.
It's understand really all segment. Vibes. Yeah.
Okay, are we ready to move on to Knives Out of Fives?
I think so.
Totally.
All right. Chelsea, set the scene. What did people think?
I mean, we all know that this is one of the most famous scary movies of all time. It, again, was the blueprint for so much, but it also just, like, is really beloved. It has an 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb. It has 84% fresh from critics on Rotten Tomatoes, 87% fresh from audiences. And it both won 2 Oscars and was nominated for a shit ton more. So, like, it
including
won
Best
for...
Best Picture.
Yeah, it was nominated for Best Picture, which was, like,
rare.
Shocking to me because I was, like, we really had to... fight for that. It felt like when Get Out was nominated. And so it was like, oh, there was a time when this was like willing to be celebrated, at least under some constraints. And we've seen other Oscar noms and stuff in the past. But this one for Best Writing for Adapted Screenplay and Best Sound. And it was nominated for Best Picture, Best Actress in a Leading Role for Ellen Burstyn, Best Actress in a Supporting Role for Linda Blair, Best Actor in a Supporting Role for, what's his name? Jack Miller, who plays Father Karis, I think. It was nominated for Best Director, Best Cinematography. Jason Miller, thank you. Best Art Direction and Set Decoration and Best Film Editing. So, like, it really just kind of went down the list. But I was shocked to not see makeup on there. But I don't know when that was a category. So, actually,
true,
it might
not have
existed at the time.
Yet.
I don't know, though. It's not for me to know. Everybody can Google at their own.
Speaking of screenplay, I do have a little treat for you guys.
Oh.
So, I just have to show you. This is one of my most prized possessions. This is the original script to the movie. I keep a rosary.
A little Yeah.
Oh, smart. Cool.
Good thinking.
My
a little
sister.
Saint Christopher.
My sister. Let's see who's on it. I don't know who that is. Oh,
some saint. Some good guy.
Someone.
A good guy to have around.
It's
I'm sure.
Guadalupe, actually. My sister got this for me. It is a signed by Linda Blair script to The Exorcist.
Ooh. Dude, that's so cool.
It says, what an excellent day for an exorcism. My sister got this for me a couple of years ago, and I bought this nice thing for it. But the script to this movie, like the screenplay, the adaptation, like I said, like if you like the movie, you'll love the book. But boy, oh boy, the script is tight. Like, once you actually read it, and you're like, wow, everything really does come together. Like, there's really no fluff, which is hard to say for a 2-hour movie. I know that doesn't sound like a long movie, but sometimes horror movies, if they're too long, it's
it's too long.
Yeah, it loses you.
Yeah. Well,
do you want to give your review first?
5 out of 5, man. Listen, it's my favorite movie of all time. Not just horror movie, favorite movie. I think it's beautiful. And being a person who, I was raised Lutheran, but have since, obviously I'm not a part of the church anymore. We talk about this a lot on Keep It Weird, actually. We have a lot of spiritual discussions. We talk about beefs we have with organized religion. And like, we both grew up Lutheran, going to like Lutheran schools and stuff. It was very much so a part of our lives, and it's not anymore. But I still am very, very, very much so interested in the lives of people who are really religious. Yeah. And especially this story of, I don't know, it's just really nice to see, because you know what happens, you know, I don't like go around talking to a lot of priests. Like, that's not something I do in my spare time.
Sure.
But when a priest loses his faith, like, that's compelling. And I want to know that story. And the idea that, like, he, the thing that made him believe again was a demon, basically. I don't know. Yeah, I like, just think it's a,
if
really,
the opposite exists,
lovely.
If, like, the demon exists, then God has to, too, I guess. That yeah. can be, like,
well, I mean, of, and
like,
if he's
proof of good, I don't know.
If he was able to, like, have any effect on the demon at all, that is proof, perhaps, that he's yeah. been imbued with if some it, power, or is able to worked. Call on some power, at the very least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Really, and, like, to be, like, someone who doesn't believe in God, to, like, really, really hope at the end of this movie that Father Karras, like, meets God is, like, I don't even believe in God. Like, what are you doing? But I really, like, it gets you to that place where you're like, oh, yeah. believe in God. If it
I hope
Father
he's
Karras
in heaven. Well, watching because... the other guy sing show tunes.
No, yeah.
That's his heaven.
Like, technically commits suicide, and that's, like, a no, big no-no.
A big
and
no-no.
So, like, Father Dyer runs down there and is like, confess so I can absolve you of your sins. And then he, like, just goes ahead and absolves him. I don't know. That was a very emotional
yeah.
moment, too. Whew.
Yeah.
Brutal. I don't know. I think for me, when I first watched this movie again, it was not in the proper headspace to watch The Exorcist, but when are you for what this turns out to be, dear Christ? I was talking to Adam last night. I was like, the scope's way too big. They focus on way too many things. It's all over the place because of that, blah, blah, blah. But having this conversation, it's really made me love it more. And that happens a lot of the time, I think, on the pod when we talk about it. It's just like, it makes more sense because this is a movie that
we're
needs
doing the
processing
time. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. This movie needs a lot of processing. And I don't know. I'm really glad we had you on this episode, because I don't know if I ever would have, like, gotten how good it is without your perspective on it, because I would have just been like, ah, whatever. But yeah, no, I mean, I'm glad it has the scope that it has. I'm glad that it was true to the book. I love it when they do that shit.
Same.
And not that I've read the book. Again, I haven't read it yet. I don't want to claim that. I haven't. But yeah, I think that it's so amazing to see a movie that is so unbelievably influential, arguably, like, one of the most influential horror movies ever. Like, I can't emphasize it enough. Like, scores of people have told me this fucked them up, like, who were, like, alive in the 70s and watching it then. So yeah,
my mother-in-law was literally here today, and I told her, I was like, she was like, what are you going on tonight? And I said, you know, I'm going on the show, I'm going to be talking about The Exorcist. And she was like, that movie fucked me up so bad. She was like, I was convinced, fully convinced that I was going to get possessed.
It's so
and
scary.
I was like, damn.
People were passing out in the theaters. One lady passed out, fell down, broke her jaw, sued the film company, and they settled outside of court.
Ooh.
I want a horror movie now that does that. Like,
same.
I want to experience
a horror movie. So desensitized.
Like that. Yeah. I know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, what's going to be the movie now that has us reacting? Like that.
I think it, because we have so many different types of movies too, it's not going to be the same movie for everyone. Like, some people saw Skinamarink and it fucking scared them to their core and they shit their pants. I don't know if they literally shit their pants, but other people saw Skin Ring and they're like, this shit is so fucking stupid. It's not a real movie. And they walked out of the theater. So like, because we have so many choices now, anyway, that could be a whole nother podcast. Yeah. But anyway, for my score, it's hard. I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5 just because of my like reaction to it wasn't as good as it should be. I want to watch it again and score it again, but like I can't like fully change it, but I think that's still a really good score. It's still a great score.
I was going to say give yourself time to recover. And the next time you're like oh, I feel like destroying my life, then you can put it on again and just see how it affects you the second time.
But
it's a work of next art, year, sure. Before you watch Exorcist 3, you could do a little rewatch of Exorcist.
I'll have to watch back to back and throw up afterwards. Anyway, who wants to go next?
I'll go.
Okay.
Chelsea and I were having a Mexican stare down.
You're like, who's doing it?
Okay. So I watched this movie 3 times over the last 2 days because I just could not pay attention to it. My brain was just like, I haven't been sleeping a lot recently.
This should help.
It's Pazuzu. Who knows? they knew as soon as they're like, hello. I was going to give it a 3.5, but listening to like this conversation and you explain more, one, makes me want to watch it again. Just not right now. But I will give it a 4. Like, I cannot do this right now.
Yeah, so maybe a couple days.
It'll get a 4 out of 5 for me.
Okay.
It is definitely a movie you have to pay attention to.
You have to pay attention. Yeah,
you do. It's not something where it's like, oh, I'm going to get on my phone or I'm going to like do some work and have Exorcist on in the back.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this was one of the movies where, and I feel like I've been doing this more and more recently, but I used to take a lot of notes and like sit there on my little computer as I was watching the movies. And having notes really helps me remember like what was stand out to me and like also what happened in the movie a lot of the time. But with this one, I kind of just like lights out, sat there like in my comfy little pillow and like watched it. Again, also, I think maybe all 3 of us are just like having a week, because I was like falling asleep a little bit and I kept having to be like, okay, like I drank a Red Bull, and I was like, I have to zone in. But it was a lot to digest, and it was a lot to be like, how is this, like Father Marin is introduced first thing and then doesn't circle back until like the last thing, basically. And I didn't even recognize him as the same man at first until they, like, I knew it was the same guy because they were like, oh, he's coming from Iraq. He just got back. He was there for months. He was on a dig. I was like, okay, well, I know, but visually he seems different.
Forgot about him because it's been an hour and 40 minutes.
I didn't forget about him, but I guess I forgot his entire visual appearance. Because I was like, is this a different man? But
who is this man?
Who is this? I think that having watched it a bunch of times is bringing so much to your experience that we're not all necessarily getting, trying to process it the first time around. Even if you're watching it 3 times like Sydney did, like you're not having the time to like sit and think and like let it sink in so that you're prepared to revisit it as like a second viewing. I think we'll probably all maybe have to circle back one day. But for now, it was so much to take in. It was a little hard to do that, but I thought it was so interesting the way that it was like such a slow build and so different than I was expecting. And there were so many shots that we talked about that were like, I thought were so cool. Like the X-ray in particular, I really loved like the completely white screen and the X-ray like sliding in. I loved the shots of the Pazuzu white-faced demon. I thought that those were really cool. I liked that it was like unexplained and never circled back to really. I would probably give it like a 4.3. Because again, I kind of felt like the murder mystery plot like wasn't necessarily adding that much. But generally speaking, I liked that it really gave, especially in the beginning of the movie, it really gave the characters and those scenes like space to breathe and establish who they are and like what their deal is and what their relationships are to some degree, at least, before we're getting into the meat of the storyline.
Well, I think I listened to, it was a while ago. When did you guys do Poltergeist?
October?
Oh, mm-hmm. Really? It was like last year? I thought it was earlier than that. But I remember you guys talking about how much you enjoyed the time before scary stuff happened. Like, literally, like, just living with this family, which is something that, like, when they remade Poltergeist, they did a horrible job of. The family moved into this house. We didn't know their relationship because all families have. We didn't get Tweety funeral. Like, all families have different relationships. You can't just be like, family. And you know everything about them, mm-hmm. You know? So, like, giving a horror movie, especially, I think, that space to introduce you to the characters, make you love the characters, and then do horrible shit to the characters. When you start too early or you don't give enough, why are we supposed to care? And there are some movies like that, like House of Wax. I don't give a shit about these people. I don't give a shit about Paris Hilton. I just want to see a pole go through her eye. You know what I mean?
You're like, there for something different.
You're there for something different. But if you are taking a more serious route, you are taking a more emotional route, like Poltergeist, like The Omen, like The Exorcist, Conjuring movies, sort of, like, you do need to have that established. Like, these are the people that you're going to watch be tortured. And I'm going to make you love them first. And it's going to hurt so much more.
Wreck your shit.
Yeah.
Well, they do a good job of that here.
They do. Yeah. I got really high last night and watched it and was so overstimulated. Yeah. And then I was just, I think like, so when
and
I tried to
watch. And then they're like puking at you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like when I tried to watch it today, I was like having like PTSD. I got like so high last night. It was an accident. Wrong. Too many dabs. On top of my edible.
Oh my God.
Been you know there, when you like have a it. Little movie watching supplement and then you're like, but let me get the party started.
Yeah. I was like, this is taking too long because it was old. It was an old one that I was like, oh, I don't know if this will work. And then it did. And I was like, oh no.
I would think that watching this movie high would be an overstimulating. Yeah. Overstimulating. I remember I got really high when I watched the Babadook for the first time. And that
oh, was God.
Because that child, I was like, I'm gonna lose it. Which is the point. But I could have used some sobriety.
So that was The Exorcist. Next week, we're gonna do something not as intense and not as prestigious, if one will. And this, I think, is actual. This movie, I would say, is prestigious in a horror comedy category because I personally think it is one of the best horror comedies out there, and that is Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Well, gorgeous. I mean, I can't wait because I always confuse it with Star versus the Forces of Evil. So that's a cartoon, as it turns out. Really excited to find out the other differences between these two properties.
I cannot wait to rewatch this. I saw this in theaters with my dad, who does not like horror movies. And okay. I don't know what it was, but I don't think, if I remember correctly, we didn't know that it was a comedy, or I didn't at least. And so I was shocked that he wanted to go see it. And then I was, you know, absolutely befuddled and bemused when I like realized what this movie actually was. Had a great time.
Okay, great.
I love using quarter words, okay?
Lee, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I was so excited to do this.
You are like a font of knowledge for this shit. Like, thank you. I like, really like the movie so much better now. But okay, tell us all where we can listen to Keep It Weird, where we can follow you on social. Let them all know.
Definitely. You can follow us on social media at Keep It Weirdcast. We have an Instagram, Twitter. We have a Facebook group. We have a Facebook page. We have all of that. Our podcast, we actually just started doing YouTube. We're on YouTube this year. We've had a YouTube for years, but like we're actually recording our episodes. There's a lot more like funny sight gags now that you can see us on top of hearing us. So it's just, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. So that's youtube.com/keepitweirdpodcast. But if you go to keepitweirdpodcast.com/podcast, I know that's a little repetitive, but that will lead you to all of our episodes. And there's also, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your favorite shows, we're there. But yeah, we just did a really great episode. Speaking of religion, our latest episode, I covered the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, which is an actual book of the Bible that was never included in the Bible.
I wonder why.
And we covered a train crash that happened in 2016. That's kind of strange and spooky. Lauren taught us that plants actually might be able to make sounds and hear sounds.
Don't tell me that.
Plants, so that's fucked up. And
are your plants spying on you more?
Are your plants listening to you? Yeah. So yeah, we just cover all things strange and unusual, and it's a lot of fun. You should come hang out.
Yeah, Keep It Weird is one of my favorite podcasts. So it's been an honor to have the two pieces of the pod come together onto our podcast. You. So come back anytime.
Whenever you'll have me.
So, you know, it's that time of the episode where I ask you to do a 5-star review. And aren't you inspired by the sweet, sultry sound of Ashley's voice? Why don't you write a review on our podcast complimenting her? It's so easy to do. It makes a lot of sense. And everybody goes home happy. Nice. Yeah, come on. She just dropped so much knowledge on you. That's the least you can do. And why not follow us on social media? We're at Spooky Tuesday Pod on Facebook and Tumblr, and at Spooky_Tuesday on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, something else. And we're also at Spooky Tuesday on Letterboxd. And I would like to say that we have a YouTube as well. And we're trying to get to 100 subscribers. Please subscribe. And also, I would like to say thank you for listening and see you next Tuesday.
Bye, Spookies.
Your mother sucks cocks in hell, Karis, you faithless slime.
Spooky Tuesday was created by Monica Height, Sydney Thompson, and Chelsea Duff, and edited by Sydney Thompson. Our gorgeously spooky tunes are all thanks to Tamra Simons, who you can follow on Instagram at Captain Tamra, and our podcast art is by Mary Murphy, who you can find on Instagram at the_moon_OMG.